Today, ceremonies marking the 50th anniversary of the Marshall Plan for Europe were held at Arlington National Cemetery. On June 5, 1947, at Harvard University, then-Secretary of State George C. Marshall laid out a U.S. plan to aid the war-ravaged continent. The germ of the idea came in a speech by President Truman 3 months before, proposing aid to Greece and Turkey. Broadcaster Robert Trout remembers that spring as a time of slow but important change.
Someone recently asked me where I was the day the Cold War began. I thought for a rather long minute, then drew a most embarrassing blank. As a correspondent who had broadcast so much of it, not to mention the hot war that preceded it, I have great stories about where I was the day Hitler invaded Poland and the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. But I haven't the faintest idea where I was or what I was doing the day the Cold War began. Does anybody know? When did the Cold War begin, anyway?
An extra report on this busy first week in Berlin for American occupation forces. Richard C. Hotellet reporting.
Maybe it was in July 1945 when I called in my colleague Dick Hotellet to report the first faint stirrings of early Soviet-American tension in Berlin.
But there appear now to be some difficulties in this field. For one thing, we prohibit politics, the Russians encourage it. And there are several other problems. The Russians, who had been moving out, today resumed military government control of our areas.
Others say it began the day the British told Washington that the future of Greece and Turkey was up to either the Russians or us. But if the Truman Doctrine started the chain of events that would lead to June the 5th and what Walter Lippmann would soon call the Cold War, there was no general sense of emergency among most Americans. No limousines converged on the White House. I interrupted no radio broadcasts with impatient news bulletins, and there were no extras on the street. The news didn't burst forth, it dripped out. American-Soviet relations had settled into a series of tedious foreign ministers' meetings. They frustrated diplomats and bored the public almost as much as those of us who had to report them. They created an illusion that nothing was happening.
7:45 New York time, Campbell Soup News time, bringing you Robert Trout with the news till now.
One of those meetings was going on in Moscow the day the Truman Doctrine was announced to the world. My colleague, Howard K. Smith, was in Moscow with Marshall, and every night I called in his reports for CBS, as I call him in now to remember what the Truman speech meant in Moscow.
Well, it was deadly. It was, the conference wasn't going anywhere, no matter what, but that really collapsed it. One of the four foreign ministers said, "Where do we go from here?" And the other said, "God knows." And the third one said, "I didn't know he was here."
Before Truman signed the Greek-Turkish aid bill in May, he confessed, "Nobody knows where this will lead us." We correspondents were wondering the same thing. Lippmann was pessimistic, as if he could see beyond Greece and Turkey to Korea and Vietnam. But first it would lead to Harvard on June the 5th. For the third time in the century, America was about to come to the rescue of Europe. But most of us reporters saw the Marshall Address as the second or third story of the day, certainly behind the simultaneous communist coup in Hungary. Its implications were too subtle to stir the drama of 1917 or 1941. Ever so gently, Marshall laid down the velvet gauntlet. Even the Soviet Union was welcome. If the world was to be divided between Russia and the West, Marshall wanted Moscow to be the one to say it first. 3 weeks later in Paris, Molotov did just that and took 8 other Eastern European countries with him.
Here's Robert Trout with the news till now.
Good evening. Friday night, a July Friday, and throughout the land the cares of the week are thrown off as most of us relax for the weekend. Golfing, swimming, camping, boating, motoring, dancing, a nation having fun in July. History was creeping past us, and we barely noticed. Too absorbed in the wonderful ordinariness of post-war pleasures. But in Washington, there's worry. All is not right with our world, and what bothers the world affects the United States of America. What was bothering Washington on this particular July 11th was the fact that 8 Eastern European nations had now opted out. I said, the Russian attitude on the whole Marshall Plan
conference in Paris has injured, but not crippled, the American efforts to help Europe to help herself. Eight of the invited nations will not be there. Eight plus Russia.
Suddenly, there it was, the face of Russian influence. One by one, I ticked off the countries we would soon be calling satellites: Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Poland, Albania, and the others. The world seemed to have chosen sides and irreparably divided itself. The first fruit of the Marshall Plan, before a single dollar was spent, was a bipolar world.
Definitely two groups now, the Eastern and the Western blocs. One, those who will meet in Paris, represent 213 million people. The invited who have rejected the invitation number 96 million, not counting Russia with its estimated 194 million inhabitants.
I confess, those words seem immensely more historic now than on the summer evening I first spoke them 50 years ago. Had I known how long it would all persist and how completely it would define our lives, I surely would have paused to give them the weight they deserved. But history is known by its consequences, which are often as unknowable in the moment as the quality of the people behind them. I can't help thinking that we were blessed with men of rare quality and subtlety at a time when subtlety held more power than force. Howard K. Smith.
I think those men, led by Acheson and Marshall, most conspicuously, provided the most creative leaders we've had since the Founding Fathers. They really charted a way to try to prevent wars in the future and to deal with the threat of the Russian Empire that was unique and very creative.
Maybe this is why long life has been such a special gift to this journalist. I can enjoy the satisfaction of closure. I have lived long enough to appreciate the full qualities of the men I covered, long enough to understand what the stories really meant, and ultimately how they all turned out. For National Public Radio, this is Robert Trout in New York.